One, two, three. Okay.
One more time. All right, we get to Saigon. You are an M60.
I'm not signed. We're in processing for
You're in Saigon for 5 to 7 days. Okay.
In processing.
Okay, in processing. And what do they do in processing? Just figure out where they're going
to
sign
you? Yeah, where they're going to send you to.
Okay.
Okay, and then we get, I got
assigned
to the 25th Infantry.
Okay.
We took trucks, these convoys, what they called them. We convoyed to the base camp from there. That was scary because we didn't have ammo. And
so they literally put you...
We were green. We didn't know what was going on.
So they literally took you out of Saigon to your base camp without any ammo,
Without any weapons.
Without any weapons.
Yeah. Okay. For me, it was scary because I didn't know what was going on. You know, people had been ambushed and attacked, so.
All right.
Anyway, we made it safe.
Made it safely. All right. What was...
The name of the base camp?
Yeah, what was it like at base camp? What was non-combat life like? What would you guys do on a daily basis in order to, when you weren't out having to move?
Well, let me tell you this. When I know a base camp, I spent 2 weeks when I first came in country, okay? Mm-hmm. I got wounded in November.
So
and I spent about 5 weeks in Japan, and then I went back. I volunteered to go back to my same unit. Well, there weren't too many people left. Yeah, but I got stuck as a squad leader then.
Okay.
So I had 6 new men for that. Well, let's go back to where we were though.
Yeah, let's go back to the okay. So you get injured. So you're in. You're in country less than a month and you get injured.
Yeah.
Okay.
Around the 22nd. I'm not sure. You can get the medical records on that.
Yeah, I can get the medical records on the full thing. But
okay.
But you're basically injured pretty early.
In November, yeah.
In November.
We saw a couple of combats and that's when I saw my first kill. Our side.
Okay. So you saw your first kill on your side.
Yeah, it was in November. The day I got wounded.
What kind of a wound was it?
It was just a piece of shrapnel. It was a freak one.
Okay.
Because I was away from I was away from where it was, but it injured my bone and it's still in there. So.
Okay. All right. And so you spent 5 weeks in Japan?
Me, I think 4 to 5 weeks in Japan.
Okay. So
we came back right after Christmas.
All righty. Now here's something I really want to get. You're injured on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What exactly happens? Your medic runs over to you, or what?
No, I had to get out by myself. They were carrying a dead body out.
Okay. So
what it was, I was set in position. Our point man went out there and got just like that. He got laid down. So we had cover fires for the medics to come in. Well, when the medics came in, the older gunner came in and took over, because I wasn't really experienced with 60. Anyway, I went back and I covered the medics with a 16, and that's the big thing. We had 16s, okay, when we went in. Before we went on this operation, we changed all our 16s. They brought some new ones and we had to trade them off. That firefight, I walked out of there with 4 M16s. They were all jammed and you couldn't get more than 3 rounds out of them.
Okay, that's a common complaint about the M16 from their first.
This was in late October. And somebody told me that Mattel made them. I don't know if that's true or not. But we got rid of them awful fast. But and that's what happened. We ended up with them.
Hmm.
And I, like I said, I carried 4 or 5 of them out with me. because they were carrying bodies, and I was supposed to be covering them, and that's it. Three rounds, and it was jammed. And I had, out of those five, one of them was already jammed. Mine, I jammed, and the other one's jammed after three rounds, just like mine did.
So you're covering, you take the shrapnel, so you're hobbling back to base camp?
No, we're right there. Okay. We didn't come in out of a base camp. We got choppered in. Okay. We got choppered in. We had to jump out of the choppers.
Okay.
We knew they were there. Mm-hmm. We just didn't know where.
Yeah.
It was our job.
It's a little bit, it's a little bit. So, stupid. Yeah, because from what I understand, the basic operation was to bomb the area where you were going to land the helicopter. So you were identifying where you were going to be dropping your guys off at.
I never heard of any bombs. All they did was come in. The gunners would sweep the area.
Uh-huh.
Okay. This happens all the time. We go in heavy country. Our crew always went in heavy country when it was shipped. I mean, we were from Coochie, Vietnam. Coochie was our base camp.
Okay.
Okay. You've heard of Coochie?
Yeah, I know it. Yeah.
Okay. There was a whole village back there. Well, when we didn't have any, when we couldn't find anything to do, you know, we were out on base camp all the time. I mean, out in the field. Like I said, I had 2 weeks when I was in country. The first time I got wounded, I had about a week. Second time I got wounded, I had a week. And then when I came home, I had a week. That's all the time I spent. Was 5 weeks. In base camps. Wesson was out in the field constantly.
So you're always constantly out in the field.
Yeah.
So how did you get treated and how did they get you to Japan? That's the big thing I wanted to know.
The medics treat you right there.
Okay.
Basically wrap you. You get on a chopper, you go back, you know, medevac, they take you right to the hospital. You know, crash hospital.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Like a MASH unit.
MASH unit, yeah. And they prep you. Like me, they just cut me open. They couldn't get it because it was stuck to the bone. So they wrapped me up and sent me to Japan. Because there's a high infection rate there.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah. So, you're in a place with no sterilization.
I got
malaria running rampant, too. So.
Yeah. I got allergic to penicillin because of the shit they were in there. So, anyway.
All right, so you made it back, and you asked to go back to your same platoon?
I didn't have to. I requested to.
You requested. Okay, yeah. So you requested to go back.
Yeah. And there wasn't quite as many people there. There was still a lot of them, but not quite. Yeah.
Not quite. And you were already starting to see the effects.
Yeah. Well, I seen them. The guys getting blown out of the helicopters and everything, so... I was there with him,
All right, so...
Seen a lot of that shit, yeah.
You're back. 5 weeks would have put you around, what, December, or beginning of January of 68?
It was in December. It was right after Christmas Day.
December of 67?
26. December 26, flew back. Then I was in base camp. Not even a week, just when the guys came back in. And I got stuck with six new guys. I was first assigned as an assistant squad leader. Okay. Well, the first mission we went on, he didn't want to go out because he was short. So I took over, and it was automatic from then on that I was a squad leader.
Squad leader.
Yeah. Which wasn't fun. It's a lot of responsibility when you got six new guys. Yeah.
So it's 68, December of 67. So that brings you up to January of 30. That brings me up to Tet, January 31st, 1968.
Yeah, I was the squad leader during that time.
All right, so this is big.
And I remember that day well. time we were just out in the field, sweeping, waiting to get shot at. That's all we did. We were just walking, sitting ducks. All we did was, you know, wait to be shot at. We couldn't fire until we were fired on. So, that's all we did. Make a lot of noise, let them know they're there, wait for them to shoot at you, and then go after them.
Very because of your rules of your rules of engagement, you were involved in a proxy war containment proxy war that you weren't even supposed to be a part of.
Exactly.
So, what is the military information going out before Tet? Because it seems like the information is very, very redacted and doctored up. I mean, it's because up until then everything's going, and then we get the Cronkite, we get the Walter Cronkite that the Tets that we're in fear of losing this war.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing what are they telling you there while you're there, going on at the same time right before this whole thing, before the whole tide of the war starts.
Their whole idea was, you know, we're here to get them out of communism.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what they were doing is they were trying to set up a foothold in China. That's all it was. They wanted a foothold. They wanted a piece of China where they can build their big fortune ship, you know, air bases.
And so that's...
To me, that's all it was. That's all it was about.
Was just putting another military target to surround
the
communist China and Soviet Union.
To me, that's the only thing I saw when, you know, I couldn't see any other reason other than that to be there. And it was a battle lost. I mean, even the Vietnamese, and I was really friendly with the people there. You know, I got to know them. I hung around and talked with the kids and the people outside the wire. They're pretty amazing people.
So then, Tet, what were you doing during that day? Because I know it happens early in the morning. It happens like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. It starts off.
It started off with us that way. We were out there for it.
All right.
We were out there 2 days before that. We were called into base camp. We went out as a platoon-sized night patrol listening post. Okay. We spent the whole night out there in a bomb crater with ants eating us alive and too scared to even move because you can hear them digging. That was our base camp. When they came in, they came out underneath the big guns. They tunneled all the way past the big guns and came in. But I was leading my squad that day. That day, we were out doing a sweep. And we got lost. Everybody got separated. We came back. We set up our night positions. And me and my guys were laid out right by a bamboo patch. There was an Arvin compound behind us, and the rest of the company was out on that side. We were quite, advanced lookout. So one of my guys woke me up and said, there's some guys moving across there, and there was. And they said, do we shoot them? I said, no, just wait and see what they do. Well, they were setting up a mortar pit. And about 2 a.m, all hell broke loose. That's no shit. All hell broke loose. That was our first kill. My team did a kill on the two guys.
On the two guys that were setting up that mortar
patch? The guy that was supposed to be our platoon, my squad leader.
Yeah.
My squad leader went out there, crawled on his hands and knees to get the kill so he could take a 3-day R&R in someplace safe, you know.
Yeah.
So we told him, go ahead. Well, when we saw him, three gooks, Vietnamese, fired their AKs at him, and he was firing back, and they were firing back, and he was firing back. They threw a bomb, and you seen his body go up like that and go down. We thought he was gone. I grabbed my men, I climbed the button, laid right into him. You couldn't even see their faces. I mean, they were that tore up. And he came back with powder burns on his butt. He got the hell back at base camp and never came back. But during that whole battle, this lasted all the way through morning, okay?
Yeah.
Like the Arvins were shooting, they were coming in between the Arvins and they were right along the tree line shooting at us. So the Arvins were shooting at us and Vietnamese were shooting at us and we kept yelling at them to stop, so they wouldn't, so I told my man to open up, put in a fresh clip. Yeah. Through the Arvin compound, they started screaming and they never shot at us anymore that night. But anyway, the worst part of it was a couple of guys got wounded in the battle, okay? They brought in a medevac helicopter, and a chopper came down. There was a pilot, co-pilot, and two medics on it. And we had one litter and three ambulatory, which took the three ambulatory, two guys to carry the ambulatory, I mean the stretcher,
yeah.
Plus the guy in the stretcher. That's six guys. Pilot, co-pilot, and two
regular medics.
Yeah, two medics. I never saw a wall of fire in my whole life. This sucker had to be at least 20 foot high and about, 20 foot wide. I mean, solid tracer rounds.
Really?
Got everybody. Except the co-pilot. He landed it in Cochi and then he died after that. That was on the 31st, the night of the 31st, and the day of the 1st of February, which was, you know, their new year.
Yeah,
that's what it was all
yeah,
about.
Yeah, that's what it was. The Tet, yeah, the Tet is
the Lunar New Year battle. Yeah, and from there, we packed up and we went all down around Saigon, around the racetrack. That's where we were. They're all over the place.
The racetrack?
Yeah. And we were in the area of the racetrack. We were out looking for goose.
Yeah, I've blown up Saigon before. I've seen that. I know exactly where you're talking about. I know exactly where that racetrack's at. All right. So that's the turning point of the war. That's the big part. From there it's all back and forth until you guys get pushed all the way back down.
Yeah.
Yeah, we covered that.
There was a lot of battles.
I can imagine. The average person who served a year service in World War II saw 30 days of battle. The average person who saw battle in Vietnam for a year of service saw around 3.5 to 5 months of battle.
Oh yeah.
Which is most guys
got out after 5 months or 4 months. I could have gotten out of it when I was wounded the second time, but I said no. But they survived the human weapon. I wasn't there.
Okay, so you were never there for a harsh winter.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, because the 68 and the 69 winters were bad. The 68 yeah. and the 69 winters were bad because it's all slush and mud and everything like that. Okay.
It was pretty muddy.
I know the summers. Yeah,
but it's summer.
Everybody talks about how bad the summers of Vietnam
it's
were,
the
but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but the monsoons are what do you.
That's
where
the
all the
months.
Mud puddles are and everything. Yeah. When during the monsoon season.
Okay.
So that's around June. I remember taking a shower and the rain went by too fast. We ended up with dry soap on it.
Okay. So you said you've been injured three times.
Twice.
I've got the first one twice.
I was injured twice.
So you were injured. So the first one was right there when you first got there in November.
Yeah,
when
about
was the
three or four days after I got.
And when was the second injury?
That was, I said February 28th, right? Not quite toward the end of 10.
Okay.
I missed a human wave and then. I think it lasted until about the middle of March, I believe.
Yeah.
The battles.
The battles, yeah.
Yeah.
It was just skirmish after skirmish after skirmish.
Oh,
along that long
yeah,
that
yeah, big time.
All right. So, how long were you in there?
That was only about, not even 3 weeks, two and a half weeks.
About 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
So you're back before April.
Yeah.
So you're back mid-March from where, April.
Yeah. And they wouldn't let me go out in the field.
No more field work after the second one?
That's what they tried to stop me from doing. I could have came home after the second one.
Okay.
But I didn't want to. And when they got me there, they wouldn't let me go out in the field. So, I barked, and one day I went to the officer's mess hall at night, and I stole all their steaks and all their big 10-gallon jugs of ice cream, and I laid them out on the sidewalk. Damn beast chasing after me. The next day, they put me in training for a week. I come out in the field. The field seat resupply. People were scared of me. The last time I got wounded, my company commander, he was only a second Louis, but he was acting captain. Mm-hmm. And he was a chicken. And whenever we have a battle, he'd be clear the hell out of nowhere. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I had one here, and one through my ear.
Yeah.
And I walked up there. Finally, they patched me up, and I go up there, and I holler at somebody, "Where the hell are you?" "Well, I'm here." They hide in the brush. So we got there, and I told him he needed to call me a medevac. He said, "Well, we can't get you." And he says, "They're all out right now." And I says, "Well, I took my 16. I said, I got ahead of them. Got my arm, put it in there. I can't make any promises. I might pass out again." The battalion commander came down and got me.
Did he?
Yeah, he said I almost fell out of the chopper 3 times while they were taking me. I kept passing out.
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah.
With that much blood loss, yeah. Especially going into
in a head wound, too.
Yeah, especially. All right.
But I was field after that. I was field supply.
Your field supply.
Yeah, after, I stayed out there.
All right.
We got attacked once while we were out there, and they were always going out to battle. You know, going somewhere. One time we guarded the Sargon River. Whew. That's scary.
You see those, the apocalypse now, the movies where they're coming up out of the water and attacking us.
Yeah.
Like that would always have been my fear. It's just rivers are our natural spot where you.
They were all over the place.
Yeah, rivers are a natural spot to attack.
Oh, yeah. And we were just in an island. There was a bunch of cobras out there. And we killed something like 20 cobras, but most of them are small ones.
Oh, yeah.
And they're the deadliest because they don't know.
They don't control the venom.
Yeah. So, they have venom, but they don't control it. You get more of a strike
instead of... Yeah. Yeah. Here's the one thing. Okay. Military information. You spoke about how when you were up there, you were like, okay, all we're doing is trying to put bases and military and stuff over here. What was the military, how were you getting orders, and how were you relaying them, and what was the difference in orders how were you given orders, and then how was the reality, I guess, because you have like, oh, you have this and this and this, but in reality, I'm not saluting somebody and taking my helmet off in here and, you know,
yeah,
that
most of a lot of that.
Yeah, so.
I mean, you didn't even wear stripes or bars or nothing out in the field.
No stripes or bars.
No, nothing. You don't wear colors because they go after lieutenants and the heavy stripes, so.
Anything else that you can think of?
Track of what we were talking about besides that. Basically, what are you trying to get?
Basically, I'm just trying to... Just, uh, I, I'm just just I'm just pulling little bits of information and stuff right now.
Yeah, I just got in and lost my train of thought, but basically, you know, we were the order takers. You know, everything comes down from command. Mm-hmm. But you know, we've had officers that, you know, disobeyed. I disobeyed as a squad leader. I disobeyed commands. If you ever watched Platoon, there was a guy named Barnes and Elias.
Yeah.
Those were both buddies of mine. Okay. And I was a third squad leader. Barnes was from Arkansas, and Elias was from California, L.A. area. But the story of Platoon was based on pretty much our company.
Okay.
We can't prove it.
Nobody can prove it. Yeah. The other thing that I really wanted to go over. So you're running supplies all the way up. What was the last parts of your service while you were over there? So you're just running supplies.
I was in charge of supplies, making sure we had the proper equipment. The equipment was working.
Okay.
Everybody had good clothing, you know, change of clothing occasionally. He didn't change clothes out there very often because he smelled different. So
yeah.
If you stay dirty, you can hide better.
Okay.
Really? You smell like
they, soap and water, they're gonna know
you're around. Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, okay.
That's why you don't carry cigarettes too much, you know, smoke too much, because even that.
Yeah. Gives you away.
Yeah.
Okay. So then.
But all I did was supply everybody and make sure the equipment was working. Okay. I had. That's how I found out our supply sergeant was black marketing, because he would never give us the equipment we wanted. And we had 360s, the machine guns, the smallest machine guns, one for each squad. Well, none of them were working one day, and I put in requests 3 times for supplies to get it fixed. Well, he didn't bring it, and the supply chopper came in. So I stopped the chopper and asked the gunner. He said, "You got some parts I can borrow?" Well, took it out there, got it running, tested it. I jumped on the damn chopper, went back to the base camp, and said, "Bitch, had his feet up in the air, watching TV, drinking cold beer, and a lot of fucking money in his pocket." And I took my 16, and I pointed it at him and put it on auto. Said, "Look, son of a bitch, when I ask for something, I need it. Don't fuck with me anymore, you know?" And he didn't. You had to be that way sometimes. Take charge.
It's a war. You're in charge of keeping yourself and other people alive.
Lucky I never killed anybody.
Yeah.
I almost killed one of my own men one night, because we were lined up together, side by side almost, mm-hmm. hiding in a spot, because you couldn't dig holes or nothing. You had to wait until dark and then find your spot to hide.
Yeah.
So we were there, and we'd take turns, you know. 2 hours at a time, wake up, go down the line, wake up, you know.
Yeah.
So you didn't get much rest. Anyway, one of the guys woke me up and he said, "Somebody fell asleep in the car." And everybody kind of knew who the guy was. We knew him. And they woke him up and he started hollering. And I grabbed him by the mouth and I took the butt end of my 16 and said, "Open it one more time, motherfucker." I really did. I saved his ass the next day. But you know, you just gotta be demanding.
It's a war.
Yeah.
War is a very rough thing. Yeah. You have
to stay alive, and that's all there is. That's what it's about.
The war is only over for
those. It has nothing to do with ideals or anything else. It's staying a fucking life. That's all there is. That's all there is to it. There was no rhyme or reason otherwise.
So then you're discharged.
No, I come back and I had spent 4, 5 and a half more months at where all the dignitaries are in Maryland, Fort Meade.
Oh, okay.
I spent 4 and a half, 5 and a half months in Fort Meade.
So
I was supposed to be a tank driver. All I did was start the engine, pull up forward, 3 or 4 step, pull back, shut it off.
Should have been there for the 4th of July celebration.
Yeah, really. Yeah. But that was the end of mine.
That was it, huh? So
yeah.
When I
got out, my platoon sergeant, I got out the day before. I got discharged on Friday. Packed up all my shit, put it in my locker. We all went party. I fell out on this one guy's hooch. Went back, and my damn duffel bag was gone. And went outside because they were having stand down. Went outside, and Sergeant just looking at me. Look over your bag. So he said, right there. You're out of this army. Get the hell out of here by my face. He put up with a lot of shit with me. A lot of guys did, but you know, yeah, that's the way you gotta be to survive. I learned to be honorary and shit. I learned how to make it happen.
So you got back. So they kicked you, or well, you're done.
I was discharged.
You're discharged. Your sergeant said, "Please get out." You got your belt and says, "We don't want you here anymore."
Yeah.
But your sergeant said, "So you're discharged."
Yeah.
Okay. And then you come back through the same route you went up through Alaska to avoid.
No, this was back in the States.
Okay.
This was when I went to Fort Meade.
Okay, so you got back to Fort Meade, then you came back home.
Well, I came back home, spent a couple of weeks, and then went to Fort Meade.
Okay. Alrighty, and then so you were up at Fort Meade for 4 and a half months, you said?
About 5 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alrighty. And then from there what?
I came home.
You came home.
I was discharged at Fort Meade.
And discharged at Fort Meade.
We spent a day in New York and then took off.
What did you do in New York? Just sightsee?
No, a lot of the guys were from that area. I got to spend some time in Long Island. I got to spend some time right there, about a block from the, wherever it is where all the hippies and stuff were.
Yeah.
He lived about a block and a half, 2 blocks from there. And then the other one, I went to the Bushwick area with a brother.
Yeah.
That place is bad news. He told me, well, first when we got there, he said, come on, because he was from New York, we were going to take subway. He said, I'll show you something. And we walked to the parents. He asked this guy where to go, and he went down there, and he said, come on, turned the corner and went down into the tunnel. He knew what we were doing.
Yeah.
But he told me not to go outside that alone. He said, if you're going to go outside, come get me. I said, what's your big deal? No big deal. You know? So I woke up the next morning, and I looked out the window, and there were strip cars all over the place.
Oh, wow.
Some burned out buildings. That's the Bushwick.
Yeah,
in New York. But then I spent a couple of days with him, and then I took off to Kansas.
Came back home to Kansas.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So then, what did you do once you got back home? What did you do? How did you return back to civilian life?
Well, I went back to the railroad. Didn't work.
Went back to the railroad.
Didn't work. They wanted to work 4 hours, 2 hours. In the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon, and I had the rest of the time. I couldn't do it. I had too much adrenaline in me, but I had trouble adjusting when I came back.
Huh.
I had several jobs, and they just didn't work. I quit working for a couple of years, and just hit the streets and lived on my disability. And doing other oddball things that you don't want to know about.
So, and this one, so you're home in 68. I tell you what, I'm going to take a break real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's take a break.
No problem, man.
I'm going to go to the bathroom.